top of the news this evening is speculation concerning the real facts behind the Department of Health announcement about a radioactive spill supposed to have occurred yesterday at the state nuclear plant.
You will die, only to live again in a younger body. Then you can tell me if the operation was a success. I could easily kill you now, but I'm determined to have your brain.
You're listening to the Really Awful Movies podcast, a celebration of genre cinema.
Journey to an age of great kingdoms. An age of awesome magic. An age of terrifying evil. Where one man sought the key to the ultimate power. He was the man they called Deathstalker.
From our downtown Toronto headquarters, here's episode 453 of the Really Awful Movies podcast, Deathstalker. Sword and Sandal, Sword and Sorcery, Peplum, goes by a lot of names, this genre. And this is a style of film that was inexplicably popular in the 80s, and it came complete with big broadswords, bigger muscles, oiled up bodies. Now, what drew viewers in and put bums in seats, albeit for a very brief time, were the following titles. There was Beastmaster, Yore, Hunter from the Future, Conquest, Red Sonja, Ator the Flying Eagle, Krull, which I remember seeing one of my earliest cinematic memories as a kid, Barbarian Queen, and of course, the best known of the bunch, which really helped elevate and vault Arnold Schwarzenegger into superstardom the world over, Conan the Barbarian. You know, Deathstalker is definitely one of these. It features a lot of the hallmarks of these kinds of films, where you got the furs, those double-sided axes, I think they're called labria, bad wigs, cheap setting, wristbands, and inexplicably gladiatorial combat outfits, like straight out of ancient Rome. It's weird, the stylistic similarities a lot of the sword and sorcery, sword and sandal epics had with the dystopian Mad Max style films. It's really wild. It's almost like they raided the same costume designers or whatnot. I mean, it really is bizarre how there was a lot of crossover there. Now, this one is also has the added benefit of being a tournament movie a la Bloodsport or Enter the Dragon or one of these countless types of films. Or you could even throw in, I think, stylistically, probably most accurately, Jim Cotta of all things. So Deathstalker, the eponymous titular character, he's this kind of anti-hero. He has this friend who's a witch who lives in the woods and who he consults, and he was this kind of conciliary with a mole, and he always bemoans, like, she always speaks in riddles, and the crone is basically a cipher for this movie, introducing us to, by way of cryptic blathering, rambling on about chalices, amulets, and swords for about seemingly 5 to 10 minutes, and we basically find out that whoever unites the chalice, the amulet, and the sword possesses this great mystical beyond power of magic. And unfortunately for all those concerned, two of these are being held by an evil, malevolent sorcerer named Mankar. Terrible name, but a great character. It's just this richly resplendent in this, I think, purple cape and an extravagant gown. He has this dragon tattoo. He has this pet that emerges like a jack-in-the-box. This creature that he feeds fingers, human fingers, like, talk about finger food. And it almost reminds me of the kind of creepy, scaly, slimy Aylmer creature from the late 80s. I believe it was a Hennenlotter production, Frank Hennenlotter, Brain Damage. It's wild. It pops out of this box that's thrown side, and he just, it's like his sidekick. And he's the one who's hosting this elaborate to the death tournament. And to the victor, don't go the spoils, but go, I guess, you become an heir to his fortune. And at one point, our hero, Deathstalker, says, like, what would I want with that? Isn't he an immortal being? When would you be, what good would it be to be an heir to the fortune, or be, you know, be granted the will to this guy's extravagant castle estate if he's going to live forever. And talk about, I mean, a reluctant hero. A Deathstalker, I believe, is played by a longtime TV actor and a motivational speaker. I believe his name is Richard Hill. And this is a film that spawned a tetralogy. So there's four of these for whatever reason. Well, I guess we'll get into that later, but he's a guy, a muscled guy who really resembles your Hunter from the future, with a kind of a bad shag wig and a blonde wig, and very much like Reb Brown in that film. You know, we podcasted early on in the Really Awful Movies podcast's shelf life, but he doesn't distinguish between heroes and fools when he's approached by an old king who confides in him that his daughter has been kidnapped. And Deathstalker actually says, "Heroes and fools, they're all sheep," or something to that effect. I mean, is he an anti-hero worthy of 70s cinema? I mean, hardly. He's ready with quips, too, like with asides like, "I guess it wasn't his day," after he kills some attacker. And when he experiences a coitus interruptus in the woods with a hot blonde, he tags the joke from earlier, saying, "I guess it's not my day either," as he has to put on his clothes and go about some other business with another consult with a witch. Really weird. Eventually, he is cajoled into the mission that finds himself looking for the kidnapped daughter of this errant king. And along the way, and this is very, very similar in a way to Enter the Dragon, where the different combatants, or maybe a blood sport, where they actually all meet and find out that they're all going to this tournament and befriend one another. In this case, it's the presence of Lana Clarkson, who plays this warrior princess, Kyra, who, by way of introduction, we see cloaked in black and amazing with a sword and unbelievably skilled in that regard. But, you know, it's almost like she stepped out of a Bergman film or something, because she's obscured to look almost like Death himself. But meanwhile, she exposes these pendulous breasts, and it's just wild that she's meant to be this serious competitor in this to the death tournament. And unfortunately for for her and for more people more broadly, I guess she did star in Fast Times at Ridgemont High, but most people, I think, probably and unfortunately now know her as the actress shot and killed by whack job music producer, the Wall of Sound creator himself, the unhinged Phil Spector. So, and also it should be said that the kidnapped princess, I guess, is played by Barbie Benton, Hugh Hefner girlfriend and star of Cannon's bonkers healthcare slasher, and one of our personal faves on the Really Awful Movies podcast, Hospital Massacre. So there are some notable names in this film, at least for genre heads. So what we get is these different principals going to this tournament and being attacked along the way, but ultimately joining forces to descend on this castle where this Munkar, a sorcerer, says, you know, "What's mine is yours," and he's the host with the most, really, and produces a fulsome amount of food and drink, and this is present with this incredible orgy / bacchanal of these almost Mad Max Legion of Doom road warrior styled combatants all gathering in one place for various bar brawls and cavorting with ladies of the evening. And there's wildness across many fronts. Like, it's hard to pinpoint an exact era this would be taking place, because there's some of it conjures up ancient Rome, and there's even a scene that conjures up Oedipus with a guy missing an eye that a creature, I think, ingests at one point. Really strange stuff. But basically, we're all here for this big fight to the death tournament, and even though that takes 45 minutes to eventually start to get going, there's really copious amounts of nudity and tons of just eye candy and tons of leather jerkins and broadswords and muscles to keep the visual appeal kind of going. So that's what really is what makes this, and the fact that on his mission, I guess, this Deathstalker on his way is always saving people's lives, and this is effectively a protracted, prolonged damsel in distress type film before the ultimately seeding and switching over to this tournament style standard thing that we've seen time and time again with the likes of a Bloodsport or the likes of Jim Cotter, one of these things. So And tonally, this one's really, really off too, because there's a lot of like asides and, well, I don't know who you are, stranger, but I'm glad you came when you did. You saved my life. Like really strange, sort of lighthearted, jovial remarks and asides when, and again, this is pitted against a surfeit of nudity and sexual assault and uber violence and creatures that look like sort of ape monkey men who are frequently attacking our heroes in the forest. And so you have all this kind of uber violence, and yet you have this kind of comical tone. This is almost like, even though it's Roger Corman's production company and not canon, it has those sort of canon-esque kind of aesthetic sensibilities that would make you think and easily mistake this for one of those bonkers canon movies. And speaking of Corman, Deathstalker is a Corman production, one of the a dozen or so films he lensed in hyperinflation milieu in Argentina, where productions could be shot for the equivalent of, you know, pennies on the dollar. And speaking of which, you know, Corman was no stranger to penny pinching himself. His first production, Monster from the Ocean Floor, which I've yet to see, but I really want to dig into that one, was shot for what today can get you a decent used car. So like 10 or 12 grand, depending on who you believe. But so with a moribund economy, of course, most Argentinians welcomed foreign productions descending on the land of Eva Perón, Maradona, and Messi. But there was some opposition in some circles, especially from the cultural protectionist side, and then concerns over filmmaking of the this could be anywhere variety and dialing down anything that might be recognizably Argentinian, which is kind of funny to think of now, because you have Where Evil Lurks, the horror film that I cited as the best one of last year, being an Argentinian production. And I've seen a couple of really standout horror movies from that region. But I think as a Canadian, you might appreciate cultural protectionism. At least that was what the government has tried to do here by mandating, you know, CanCon into law, which is, you know, a portmanteau of Canadian content, and it mandates that radio stations have to play a certain amount of content that is, from the Great White North. Now, Argentinians, you can imagine at the time when all this schlock was being lensed there, that even though their crew and everything, you know, frequently stars were contributing, none of this was recognizably their own. And it was just sort of a backdrop onto which American directors could just project. And so, you know, there was that kind of tension there. But and this one, speaking of penny pinching, had a modest budget. And as I said earlier, for some reason, spawned four sequels. And this was over the span of like 5 or 6 years, too. So they're basically just spitting these things out. And three sequels released in quick succession between 87 and 91. Like and like everything else, you know, this one's getting a remake, too. I mean, I just saw this, I think it was on Bloody Disgusting, and we're getting to what we've learned here, but like who is clamoring for a Deathstalker remake exactly? Like, I'm not sure to the extent to which the novel source material were a big hit, but from what I've read, and this in no way actually spurred this discussion, which is weird. It just happened very, very randomly that these kinds of events would coincide. But Stephen Kostansky, the guy responsible for Psycho Goreman, which I admit I haven't seen, but I see everywhere on social media endlessly posting about that, and people I really respect, he's going to be in the director's chair. So there you have it. We will be getting another Deathstalker movie. And I admit, like, everyone probably has holes in their cinema watching game, because it's really impossible, unless you're a complete Howard Hughes-style shut-in, to really watch every type of film there is. But I'm not the biggest peplum sword and sorcery guy. Like, I did enjoy, I think they really are made for kids, and I remember distinctly Krull coming before Conan the Barbarian, but I remember vividly that mirror scene in Conan the Barbarian. So that one at least had the incredible charm and charisma and the star-making quality of Arnold Schwarzenegger to go for it. But a lot of these things are fairly interchangeable, and a lot of them have a very similar beat. And I guess it is kind of similar to the post-apocalyptic wasteland Mad Max style film, which had, much like the Peplum films, there was just a cottage industry of of these types of things being made in Italy. But for my money, I think the post-apocalyptic wasteland films are just a lot more fun, just because I think the mission that they're typically going on is just a lot cooler, because they got to basically find fresh water, and there's the dynamic of rebuilding a society, and it's quite often more compelling than the kind of Joseph Campbell hero's journey type story that you get from the sword and sorcery, sword and sandal type movies. I just find it more compelling and more grungy and funnier, and just a different as a backdrop, I think a cinema backdrop, that kind of spare desert landscape, which again sometimes is tapped for sword and sorcery epics as well. But I think there's a particular aesthetic that comes from the Mad Max clone movies that I think is quite amazing, particularly how they jerry-rig their cars. And I'm more fond of that genre, so I'm not sure to the extent I'll be visiting too much of the likes of a Red Sonja. They're fun for what they are. They tend to be very, very ham-fisted and very hammy as well. And particularly this one, another thing I learned is that with the star here, like, he's speaking in a kind of a very a casual vernacular, whereas everyone else is putting on this almost Shakespearean affectations of these ponderous, portentous declarations, and he's this sort of there with, well, there you go, one of these things. He's almost like someone took a present day person and just inserted them into whatever time frame this happens to be. And again, there are visual cues that span the gamut of Western culture and history that don't really place this in any particular time, although there's weaponry that you'd be forgiven for thinking would be wielded by maybe a 15th century Knights Templar or somebody. But then there's other aspects of it, like, again, the gladiatorial accoutrements that are kind of confusing, to say the least. And then there's also just the kind of Henry VIII, the swagger you get from this Amankar sorcerer character and his court. He's holding court complete with jesters and dwarves, and again, this mud wrestling and battles and fights and feasting, the kind of time-honored, those cheesy medieval jousting tournament things that they have, total tourist traps where you can gnaw on a complete, leg of lamb or something, and as if that's medieval. I don't know, did medieval people actually hold legs of turkey in lieu of actually having utensils? Who knows? But it has this kind of fun dynamic, and what it really comes together, where you have all these principles in this one giant sprawling mansion, and then the fight to the death, of course, who's going to prevail. But this is a fun, really strange at times film with a lot of violence, as I alluded to, the Oedipus and the missing eyeball, and the protracted and at times, frequent maulings and sexual assaults and abuse, but again, with weird sort of comical, would-be comical asides, this is a film that I think stands apart in many respects from some of the other more grounded, dare I call something like a Lucio Fulci's Conquest serious by any means, but they do have a certain decorum and that this one seems to be wholly lacking, and which makes it altogether all the more weird. But you could see why these kinds of films were made. They're not entirely they didn't exactly break the bank in terms of production costs, and they reap the benefits too when obviously Red Sonja and Conan the Barbarian and Conan the Destroyer were getting people descending onto multiplexes, and really I think this one earned multiple millions for a fairly threadbare budget. So I mean, all things considered, for someone who doesn't delve into this genre very often and who is fairly unfamiliar with it, save for, let's say, 15 to 20 titles have happened to pass through in my cinema watching days, which, I mean, hell, you could tally up all the massacre films I've seen in the horror space and easily exceed that number just with that alone. But hell, even if you just tallied up the Friday the 13th movies, you probably could sum the sum total of these kinds of peplum movies that I've seen. It's just not my thing particularly, but this one should be yours, and you'll have fun with this as I did. 3.25 out of 5 for me here. Just bizarre. The lead character has appeared in Cheers. I believe he was some It's weird. I've watched a lot of Cheers, but he doesn't really ring a bell. I believe he played some Eastern European musclehead or something, but he's been in tons of different shows. Now he's a motivational speaker, but the performances are kind of odd. There's again, like almost the sand people from Star Wars. There's a lot of weird sort of fringe characters and witches and infusing the proceedings with different sort of Mad Max Beyond Thunderdome type characters is a little different from something you might be more familiar with like an Ator or Barbarian Queen or something, but super fun, super ridiculous. A really good time waster, especially now, and I think you'll enjoy it. And anyway, I'll talk to you soon. Take care. Thank you.